So we're going to talk about Mara today, and actually this was a request from someone who isn't here, and the irony of things, but and part of that may have been that I, as some of you know, failed to change the subject line when I sent out the email, so it says we're talking about the five recollections, even though we aren't. But in any case, but Mara, what a cool thing. What a great idea, because Mara is really, really helpful and important in how we work this path. So Mara's a very fascinating figure in any spiritual tradition. And just to kind of respond first to our Christian cultural assumptions, Mara is not the devil and not intrinsically evil. So it's not that. And of course, nothing's intrinsically anything in Buddhism. So there's that. But that's a whole nother thing. But Mara's instead kind of this multi-layered being who manifests as male, but we can understand in many ways. And Mara is in a lot of ways a mirror of ourselves. We can really learn from how Mara deals and how the Buddha and Mara interact. It really helps us see how we are on the practice. And we can model, in a sense, learn from how the Buddha responded to the challenges that Mara brought. So technically, Mara is a deva being associated with the highest sensual realm. And Mara's function or intent is to try to keep beings within the sensual realm. Mara doesn't want beings to awaken, because if you're head of a kingdom and folks are going to leave, you don't want them to leave. You want them to stay in your kingdom. So he really has this sense of keeping things in that sphere. Through attachment to sensuality, and doubt and inertia are part of the levers that he tries to use. So again, he's not a malignant being, and this is not The Exorcist. He's kind of like us, you know, kind of like our slightly confused humanness and how we navigate the Dharma. So really, I've the more I've looked at Lama, I've sort of, he becomes more and more human the more you get into him. It's pretty, it can be actually kind of sweet, because he's a mixture of things. But he does represent his conditioned forces of delusion that obstruct awakening, those of ourselves and all sentient beings. And he represents the persistence of those delusional forces and how we trip ourselves up, how we get diverted in all the ways that Mara tries to divert the Buddha. That's what Mara's whole thing is trying to divert the Buddha through the Buddha's entire life. But we can really learn from that, because it kind of reflects in terms of our own journeys. And he's an important figure in the suttas, appears almost 400 times throughout the suttas, more than any other specific non-human being, for whatever that's worth. Ananda shows up a lot more, but Ananda's a person. But among the non-human, there's a whole bunch of devas that show up with names in various places, but Mara is mentioned as a name more than any other. So it gives us a hint of how similar, you know, Mara is to ourselves, because we kind of show up and trip ourselves up over and over and over again on the path. I don't know if you ever noticed that. The very things that stumble us are in fact us, and Mara is a sort of manifestation of our sticky, trippy, not trippy as in the hippie way, but trippy as in the trip over way that gets in the way as we go on the path. And I don't know if you ever noticed, but especially it's great in a group like this, because we get to know each other and people articulate, you know, what are their sticky places, what are their frozen places, what are their fear places, and we all kind of get a sense of each other a little bit. And when someone's speaking one of those aspects, we can kind of have a heart opening, you know, and kind of a compassion about that. And then when we share ours, people can see ours, and it becomes sort of like family. You know, our sticky places, we're all kind of know them, and it's okay, and it's not this horrendous weird thing, but it's just, oh, okay, this person, that person, this place, that place, it's okay. So it's kind of like that. And there's this phrase that'll come up a lot in what I'm going to share, and it's really useful in your practice, which is, I see you, Mara. So you might, if you have one takeaway, remember that, I see you, Mara, because it's something we can really use. I use it all the time in my practice, because basically when we recognize, oh, you again, in terms of that stuck place, then we can say, oh, I see you, Mara. And it just takes the wind out of that stuck place's sails, if I can be nautical. And this is what the Buddha said in various forms throughout his life, as Mara never gave up, kept reappearing. Mara showed up before the Buddha was awakened. Mara was trying to mess with the Buddha the entire 40 years that the Buddha was teaching. And not only the Buddha, but various monastics, male and female, around at the time of the Buddha. He's just all over the place trying to get him to not awaken. He's not hating them. He's just trying to get him to not awaken. Even at the very time of the death, right at the time of Buddha's death, he's in there saying, well, come on, hurry up and die. You know, because I don't want you to be around awakening people. And so he does all kinds of things. You know, sometimes it's very heavy-handed sledgehammer kind of blows, as we'll see. And sometimes it's real subtle little twisty things that Mara does, trying to derail the Buddha. So it's pretty fascinating, all the different ways. Kind of, it's kind of like he's looking for weaknesses. He's always scanning for weaknesses and showing up to see, oh, what about this? Can we trip up the Buddha here? Or what about power? Or what about desire? Or what about, you know, all the different ways. So it's pretty fascinating to watch, and you can see how that would be in yourself. So he manifested as fearsome elephants, as serpents, as beguiling and beautiful women, as weapons, as armies, as the allure of sleep, as a tug of fame, all these different things, you know, all things that can mess us up on the path and get us off the wrong track and forgetting what we're doing. And in each case, the Buddha would see through Mara's attempt. Every single time, he'd get it up. He'd say, I see you, Mara. And Mara would literally would shamble away. His shoulders slumped. It says that in a lot of places. His shoulders kind of slumped. And he shambled away or vanished. A lot of times he just vanishes. But it manifests as this huge serpent, you know, with 20 yonas long, whatever they are, with great teeth. And he says, I see you, Mara. And it just disappears. So it's just pretty amazing because we can think about that in terms of where we get stuck. Because, you know, we're all vulnerable to getting diverted from the path in various ways. I sure am. You know, I have to watch it all the time. And this little diversion, that little diversion, it gets subtler and subtler over time also, what the nature of our diversions is. And, you know, it might be, I don't know, wine, woman, and song, or pride, or fear, or being a workaholic, or laziness, or accomplishment, all the kinds of ways that we can try to crunch up an identity and glom onto that and not be able to see through to the nature of, ultimate nature of how things are. And they come up and over again, right? For each one of us, wherever our sticky bits are, it's not just a one-time deal. We sort of have a breakthrough and then there it is again. So this is how working with Mara and working with mindfulness are essentially the same, because the core of mindfulness practice is just being aware of what arises. And then when we're aware of it, we see through it. We deconcretize it. The ways that we were glomming on come apart. You know, we see from the Theravada tradition, we see the three characteristics, the impermanence, the not-self, the dukkha of things, and our attachments disassemble. And our sense of self disassembles from mindfulness. And in a sense, that's what all the encounters with Mara are that the Buddha did. If something comes up and the Buddha brings his, you know, awakened mind to it and it falls apart. But we can do that too. It really shows us how we can do that too in this very alive sort of way. Because you know how it is, when there's something that bugs us, whatever it is, and we have a moment of mindful awareness, and then something shifts inside of us, and we see through the place where we were stuck. That's a breakthrough. That's amazing, you know, and that's an opening, and it's a step ahead. That's what the path is like, micro steps ahead, and then some big openings every once in a while, whatever. So I see you, Mara, is a moment of mindfulness and a moment of insight, and it brings freedom from conditioned phenomena. So back to the fable of Mara, because it's very personal, very personalized, how it shows up in the suttas. And there is a book, I think I can do this, yeah, pull it up. Very interesting book called The Buddhist Cosmos, which you can download, that is pretty cool, done by a Theravada monastic, which just goes into incredible detail about the entire Buddhist cosmos. It's 171 pages, but there's a Mara section. So if you are interested, this is recommended to me by Ajahn Isabo, actually, who's a, if you don't know, is a Theravada monk. And he said, that's the book if you want to find out about that aspect of things. But it's interesting how Mara is sort of like, thank you, Carol. Mara is sort of a counterpoint or a mirror of the Buddha's unrelenting focus on awakening. And Mara kind of finds it unnerving and threatening, that light of the Buddha. He wants to tone it down, make it go away, make it stop. Because if he is the head of this samsaric kingdom and there's this great light of awakening, it just takes apart everything that he's head of. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So I can see why he'd be kind of nervous, right? And I guess he's a Devaputta, is the name in terms of Buddhist cosmology, the kind of deva he is, the highest of the sensual sphere realms. And essentially his message is that the meaning of life is having fulfilling sensory and experiences, having the best you can. That's a good life. We last time we quoted, it was Malcolm Forbes, who said, he who dies with the most toys wins. So Mara's kind of like a, right? Maybe so, yeah. You weren't here, but it was so hilarious. Malcolm Forbes, on his 70th birthday, he had a $2.5 million birthday party in Morocco. And they, jetting in all the powerful and just, and then he died like 4 months later. It's like, oh, I mean, you could say it's a good way to go, but on the other hand, it didn't change anything. So, anyway. That's true. But he's sort of like, here in our incredibly wealthy area where people have Lamborghini SUVs and giant yachts and all that, he's a promoter of that. He's sort of, that's his thing. Yeah, good life, a lush life. That's a good life. And so the Buddha is threatening, because the Buddha was like, he wasn't attached to anything. And it just undermined all of Mara's power. So that's why he was so relentless. Starting from before he was, I'm going to read a few quotes, but starting from before he was awakening, the whole 40 years, he never gives up. Mara never gives up. And so, like I was saying, that's kind of comforting, because our stuff doesn't give up, but we have to keep working with it. And if Mara was trying to make this awakened being unawaken, that gives us some latitude to work with what we have. It's kind of okay if we feel like, I'll never get past this. Well, I think we can. I think we can, even if it keeps coming up over and over. And after he kept doing it. Yeah, okay. So a few interesting horizons. Like before the Buddha's awakening, he saw a potential and he tried to stop him. And here's a quote from the suttas. For 7 years, I followed the Blessed One step by step, but I did not find an opportunity against the Mindful One. And here's a metaphor. A crow circled a stone that looked like a lump of fat. Perhaps we may find something soft there. But finding nothing, it departed. So too, having approached Gotama, I departed, disappointed. So he was looking for this way he could get in there, even before the Buddha was awakened. Therefore, he was like us. Some of you may be awakened, but like me, unawakened anyway. Before he was awakened, Mara was trying to get under the hood and find a way to stop the Buddha from the journey he was already close to succeeding in. And he couldn't find leverage just because of the Buddha's intent, just because of his purity of heart. So that's kind of cool that even then he couldn't stop him. And even then, we keep doing it. We can't be stopped. And as many of you know, maybe you do. How about the night of the Buddha's awakening? How about Mara and the Buddha's night? Anybody know about that a little bit? Yeah, there you go. So the most spectacular and well-known was during the night, the watches of the night, when Mara just pulled out the stops to stop this from happening. It was like the big threshold, the big crossing. So he just multiple assaults. There was a storm of wind, a deluge of rain, stones falling from the sky, a rain of weapons, and everything that happened, you know, in the suttas, these all these stones had fallen and it all turned to flowers and be around the Buddha. So it just wasn't working. And then he unleashed his wheel weapon on the Buddha. That didn't work. His lead battle elephant. That didn't work. Kept on turning into flowers and stuff. And then a whole giant army is just thundering against the Buddha. He's just sitting under a tree in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. and all this stuff is happening on some level. And that didn't work. You know, undulating and curvaceous daughters that try to entice the Buddha. And that didn't work. And it even tried doubt whether the Buddha had the right or capacity to awaken. And as many of you know, the Buddha said, you know, I'm witnessed by the earth. He touches the earth, that famous statue that we all see. Not like this one when he's touching the earth. So, and this, you know, we're on the path. This kind of parallels our own journey. What do we get stuck? Grasping, aversion, and ignorance. The three poisons. That's where we get stuck in different ways. It manifests in all kinds of ways. And that's what Mara was trying to find a chink in the Buddha's intense dedication to practice. We tried everything, and it didn't work. So I kind of find that kind of uplifting, you know, because it helps me navigate, you know, my own ridiculous stuff as I'm on the path, and how do I keep going? And the Buddha did it despite all that intense opposition. So maybe we can keep going. Ours is a little milder. I don't know if anyone's been attacked by a dragon in their practice that I know of, or maybe so on some level, but we can keep going. I find it kind of encouraging. We can take heart from that. But it's so amazing that he never gives up. The Mara never gives up, even though the Buddha, of course, isn't giving up either. So in the weeks after the Buddha's awakening, according to the suttas, as he's beginning to turn towards reaching out to the world, which as many of you know, at first he didn't think anybody would get it. And then some devas said, yes, you know, there are people with no dust before their eyes. So the Buddha goes to Sarnath, first teaches the five ascetics, and one of them awakens right there. And that was it. He said, wow, I think he does. He actually says, Kunda awakened in the suttas. He's like, it worked. So he's realizing that people can, if I got that right, awaken. So this is really scary for Marva, because it's bad enough that the Buddha awakened. Like, if all these other people are going to be awakening, that really is rough on the kingdom of sensuality. So he keeps pushing back. And a week after it, he appears to the Buddha and questions his purity, because the Buddha, you know, he's doing the middle way now, so it doesn't have that same kind of rigorous asceticism he once did. And Mara's saying, you know, dude, you blew it. You're off the path. You are like messed up and carnal and you're eating and everything. You should give up. You know, just forget this thing. And Buddha says, I see you, Mara. And sad and unhappy, Mara disappears. So this keeps going on. He appears as a huge bull elephant and then a giant serpent. But in both cases, the Buddha sees through it. And Mara questions the Buddha when he sleeps. Said, why are you sleeping, all doing all this sleeping if you think you're awakened? What a lazy thing you are. He says, I see you, Mara. And so he goes away. So he really despairs when the Buddha starts to send the monastics out. Then he really gets really agitated about that and is trying to stop that. And he starts to seem, when you keep reading the suttas, he less and less seems like he's malignant, and just sort of, he's not, he doesn't seem malignant, just sort of this afraid being who has a lot of power, just trying to defend their turf and doesn't know what to make of this vastness of this awakened being, but it's undermining how he understands everything and what he thought his world was. And it literally says, there's one place where it says, then the Devaputta Mara, having fallen into despair, sat by the highway scratching marks in the dirt with a stick. Isn't that great? And contemplating the various qualities of the Buddha. Then he says, I have not perfected the 10 paramis, so I have not become like him. I have not attained to omniscience, nor reached the great compassion, so have not become like him. So he's sort of sad about it. It's the darndest thing, but I love the scratching the dirt in the stick. Isn't that great? And then there's an encounter where I'm pulling out, there's a lot of them that I read and found in, you know, on different places, but I'm just from reading the suttas myself a little bit, or I do. But he challenges the Buddha's capacity to teach because he says, well, Buddha, I have control over the six sense doors because I'm Mara. So how can you teach? I have control over hearing, seeing, everything, you know. What? How can you get through that? And the Buddha says, Mara, where there is no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visible forms, no sound, no odors, no flavors, no tactile sensations, no mind consciousness, no eye consciousness, no eye consciousness, there you cannot go. And here he's referring to the emptiness of all phenomena. It's kind of like the Heart Sutra. You know, he's saying, yeah, that conquered, I go somewhere you can't see in terms of seeing through concretization of all that. And Mara responds, there is that which is called mine and those who say it is mine. If your mind is like this, you won't escape me. But the Buddha says, I am not one who speaks of me and mine. Know this, Mara, you cannot see my path. And then Mara disappears. Got him again. So, you know, Mara really challenges him about the concretization of phenomena, and Buddha just blows right through it with emptiness. And even at the very end of the Buddha's life, when his aging body was failing him, this is a great metaphor. He's like an ox cart held together with leather straps. I always loved that one. He was failing him. You know, he was 80 years old. That's incredibly old for that time. He's been walking back and forth to Ganges Valley all this time. Mara urged him to die sooner. Like, let's die, Buddha, please. And even then, the Buddha pushed back and said he wouldn't die until his disciples were able to carry the Dharma forward. So he said, I will leave in 3 months, but not now. So Mara disappeared again, urged him. He said, but now your disciples have accomplished all of these things. Enter Parinibbana now, venerable sir, blessed one. Enter Parinibbana now, welfarer, for it is a time for Parinibbana, venerable sir, blessed one. It's pretty interesting, too, the language. You never know what the sutta is. Sometimes it's like, oh, that's really a subtle little point. From the beginning of the encounters to this time, he's calling him blessed one. He didn't say that in the beginning. It's almost like he's kind of getting it on some level, how amazing the Buddha is, with great respect. But the Buddha wouldn't yield, and he finished it. So we're just going to touch on one little other interesting avenue is to think about Mara in terms of the five hindrances, which are, you know, sort of core Theravada stuff. You probably know greed, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and doubt. And they really correspond in a way to the barriers that Mara tried to erect. In the connected discourses, Mara suggests to the Buddha that a hedonistic life would be a worthy life. Why now do you live the holy life? Youth is yours. Enjoy sensual pleasures. Do not let the time pass you by. But the monk, he says, I know you, evil one. You are Mara. And he vanishes. So he's trying to tempt him. Okay, you know, a little appreciation of pleasure would be good. Greed. And then as a fearful form, he tries to do that, sloth and torpor. He says, maybe in a different appearance, maybe less spiritual practice would be time well spent. Live, good sir. Life is better than death. Living, you can do merit. What's the use of this striving so intensely? You know, he's saying, just relax a little bit, a little sloth and torpor. That's not a bad thing. That's like chill, be like Jimmy Buffett. You know, it's okay. And but again, he's got seen and he vanishes. And then even restlessness. He was speaking to a female monastic. He said, why do you sit alone in the forest? Are you grieving? Are you confused? Have you lost something? You know, subtle as it gets. And she replies, I am not grieving. I dwell with a mind well collected. And then Mara tries to raise doubt about ability to awaken. And that's really worth thinking about, you know, because I think for a lot of us, that's the sneakiest of the five hindrances is, you know, mostly, can we really do this? I've been practicing for 20 years. I haven't awakened so far. You know, can we do this? How's this work? We get doubt about the path. We get doubt about ourselves, like all those other people. Now they're, you know, they're great teachers, whatever. But I guess I'm just a shmoo, you know. We have these kind of whatever, doubt things. But we start to see, I think, from this that it's a natural order of things to be able to awaken. That is not a personal thing. And that Mara kind of illuminates that one. It's like, I see you, Mara, I see you, Mara. It's kind of peeling away all the obstructions. It helps us see just how natural the Dharma is. It's just the natural order. So we can use this on the path. And it's really, I'd like to hear when we talk, maybe some, I have a feeling some of you do that already, but how we use this, identifying the sticky places that we'll get tricked up by, and just saying, I see you, Mara, and not taking it seriously. So when we are lost, you know, when we get stuck, especially the three poisons, in greed or grasping, aversion, ignorance, well, that's four, but you know what I meant. Mara's winning, but when we step through those, you know, with a moment of insight, with a moment of kindness, it cuts through that. And it's a kind of, I see you, Mara, right there. Let's sit for a minute.